Hello, I'm going to talk about how you can make the internet faster. What specifically, I mean, how can you write fast applications? How can you tune your Linux or BSD servers that host your services? And how can you improve your networks at home or in your space or at a workplace or whatever? And first, we're going to talk about how can you build a better application. First I'm going to talk about myself. Yeah, I'm an apprentice since 2020 at a Linux distributor. I like server hosting things. I like to do mostly OS level things. And I sometimes read RFCs, IETFs, kernel code, etc. I am sort of a C novice, I would say, but I do this and that. Not sure how to describe what I do. And I like to present other people's work. This is not the first time that I've talked at an event about what other people are doing in the world. So, yeah. I haven't written anything specifically here. I'm just going to show you what you can do. And this presentation is licensed under Creative Commons, and you know, as most talks here. So writing better applications. If you write a small, let's say, script, and you have to interact with a network device that has a REST API, for example, there you might be doing it in Python, because Python is a popular scripting language. And if you do, there's this whole thing where you can do this whole post and a GET request, which you hopefully know. In HTTP, there's multiple ways to give a server information about what you want. So if you just follow the documentation of this requests library in Python, of this module, it'll tell you just do request.post and you're doing a request. Nice. And then maybe you have to interact with some sort of appliance and you have a list of items you want to tell the appliance. In this case, we are adding like console ports to a network device. And what we have to do is we have to iterate through a list of devices we need to configure. And so that means we're doing a lot of put requests, a lot of HTTP requests here. The problem here is that we are doing them separately. For each request that we do, what we need to do is first resolve the DNS of our console. Then we have to create a TCP connection. Then we have to do a TLS connection because it's encrypted. And then finally here, we can actually do a put request and then get a response back. I'll put it here in twice. That's a mistake. And then we close the connection, because in this current application, if you follow the example, all you do is say request post, and it will open a connection and close the connection. Why is that a problem? Because round trip time. You might have ever typed in the ping command into your terminal, and you know that, hey, this machine is 30 milliseconds away from me. It takes 30 milliseconds for a round trip, which is I send a message, I get a reply back, and that reply back arrives arrives where I am. And if we just do it this naively, we actually end up doing this 8 times, going back and forth. So if this script here, like for example, if I have, let's say, 50 entries, and I'm doing this whole loop for 50 entries, well, that means, theoretically, 8 round trips per request. So that's 240 milliseconds. And if that server's on a different continent, it might be even worse. And if we have 50 entries, it can take 12 seconds to run this whole script. And if it's if a different continent, it might be 60 seconds. So the obviously, not obviously, but this might annoy us, so we might want to improve a script. And what we can do is reuse the connection, where we go through this whole process of setting up our connection and just reuse it. The code change here is that we use this request library from Python and open a session. Add our headers here that we need. This is to turn off TLS verification because it's a self-signed certificate. And then we don't just post with the library, but we post in our session. And what this does is it moves our for loop to this part now, so that this whole setup part is now no longer done. So we're reusing our connection. We're keeping it open. So our round trip is only, we only have to do one round trip. Yeah. And that means if we have 50 entries, 30 milliseconds times 50 is, that's 1.5 seconds, if I'm not mistaken, excluding the whole setup phase. It's definitely faster, a lot faster. So can we do that on the web as well? Yeah, if you're a website developer, web developer, what you can do is you might have followed a tutorial that says, hey, let's use a library, something like jQuery or whatever. And they tell you, just put this thing in the top of your website, into the header part. What you're doing here is you're telling your browser, hey, there's some information about how the website has to be rendered, and you have to get it from this address. If you load a page like this, what happens is we first connect to your website, download the HTML, the browser starts parsing the HTML as it arrives, sees, oh no, CSS is somewhere else, and it has to connect to the other web server. And as we saw, that might be 8 round trips at worst. We have to do a DNS resolve. We have to open a TCP connection. We have to negotiate our TLS. It's because it's a different domain for a different web server. Even if it's not a different web server, it's still a different domain. And then we can finally pass the style sheet, and then your browser can start rendering, because without the style information, the browser doesn't know how to display your website, and it will block. So don't do this. Don't put your essential CSS files or JavaScript files onto another web server, because that just usually slows you down, unless it's in cache. So if you're not a first-time visitor, then it's not. Then it's already in cache. But the thing is, if you think, oh yeah, but this is, they say this is a CDN. It should load the JavaScript or the CSS faster. Well, the thing is, it's not really better, because again, you have to do all this whole stuff to get the resource. And if you need a CDN, by all means, then use a CDN. I mean, put your entire website behind a CDN on a single domain, and then I guess it's faster if you care about international things, international visitors, but and stuff. And cross-site resource caching is dead. It has been turned off in browsers years ago because of security concerns. So there's our whole argument that, oh, because this other website might be using the same library, it's already cached. But that's just not true, because browsers don't do that anymore. Externally embedded images are fine, of course. If you have a video or a YouTube video or image from another site, that's fine. You can include that. But the difference is that it doesn't block the rendering, because your style sheets, like the parts that say, this is how my website looks like, they are already processed, and then you have just a blank field. That's fine. But this will make your website nicer and faster to use. That's all I have to say about applications. Next, we'll move on to tuning your servers, because some of us like Linux and we host stuff. But first, let's look at how basic internet technology works again. TCP. TCP is that one protocol that we often use. It's connection-oriented. It only works if we build a connection. So we say, hey, I want to connect to you, and we say, acknowledged. And we open two ports, and we can communicate with each other. It detects errors. It asks for retransmissions. If packets are lost, it will say, hey, I haven't received this package. I'm expecting this package next. Where is this packet? This package, what was the term? Tames? TCP uses, was it frames? I'm not sure. Datagrams? Oh, something. Sorry. But it guarantees a lot of things. It guarantees you that the stuff arrives in order. So that means if something was lost along the way, and you try to read the data that you expect, it will block the read until that packet is missing. So it's strictly in order, which makes sense if you download a single file, but it's also a bit problematic sometimes. And you have to acknowledge packets. You have to, each time you receive something, you have to send an acknowledgement as the receiver. And the sender will send a certain amount of packets, which is called the window of a window size, and then it waits for the acknowledgement, and then it continues with the next window. It adjusts the window size depending on your connection speed. And one very important thing that TCP does is it employs network congestion avoidance. It does not want to overload your network. If we just blast the data as fast as we can through our interface, we would have a problem because, I have a gigabit port, but if I am connected to a 20 megabit uplink, I would blast a gigabyte through, and most of the data would be dropped by the switch because it says, hey, I'm full, I can't store any more of your packets, I have to drop them. My buffer is full, and I have to clear my buffer slowly. And that just slows networks down because we have a lot of packet loss. So what TCP does is it starts off sending really slowly, and until it notices, oh, there's congestion, it drops the sending rate and tries again. And this looks like this. This is downloading a gigabyte, almost gigabyte file on a gigabit connection. And as you can see, here's the start phase. We'll look at it closer. And then we drop packets here, and boom, the send rate drops, increases, drops, and we have this jigsaw, and this saw pattern. This is using the, I'll talk about this later, but this is using the algorithm called Cubic, which does this detection completely based on dropped packets. So it expects you to fill up the buffer. So you send and send and send, and you send faster and faster. And at some point, your router or your switch says, nope, I'm full. Packet gets dropped. And from the acknowledgments, you see, hey, I'm missing this packet in the series. And it keeps acknowledging maybe the later packages that are arriving, but it says, hey, I'm still missing this package. And the sender realizes, oh, yeah, I'm sending too fast, need to drop the rate. And then it keeps sending and sending more and more. But the more important part is this beginning phase. This is called the probing, where we try to touch the water, I don't know, test the waters, find out how fast can we go? And why is this important? We're not always transferring gigabytes of files or like big files. I don't think that most of the time we don't download big files. It's just not what we do. Instead, we might transfer smaller files, like a 500 kilobyte file. This is the same graph as earlier, but with a 500 kilobyte file. And as you can see, there are these pauses here, and it's very short. It's not even, yeah, this is in seconds. This is not even 100 milliseconds of transfer. What happens is that we are only probing. We are just trying to figure out how much can we send. But by the time we've already reached increased the window, we're still not there. We still haven't reached the limit of our gigabit connection, so we are not transferring at gigabit speed because we were trying to test if we even can do that. So we were transferring lower than gigabit speed, a lot lower, a lot slower. This transfer, I think the average was like 15 megabytes, so that's like over 100 megabits a second for half a megabyte of file. So we have the bandwidth in the connection, but we are not using it. We don't get the transfer speed, and that's because of this probing. And so I'm going to talk about this. This is a TCP trace. Each packet that we sent, each IP packet is also packaged as a TCP package. I'm not sure what it's called. We have the sequence numbers. We're counting up the packets, and we say, okay, I received packet 1, packet 2, packet 3. And our slow download, it looks like this, a bit wobbly, but the average is pretty much a gigabit. This is how it's supposed to look like. And this wobbly pattern is normal if you download at full speed. This is expected. In a perfect condition, two computers connected next to each other, you get dropped packets because that's how TCP works. With our slow transfer, we didn't get that. What can we do? This whole congestion control thing, like how fast do I have to send, how do I back off, that's described in an algorithm, and that's called the congestion control algorithm. And I mentioned Cubic. This is using Cubic, and the Cubic is the default in Linux since 2008 or something. On FreeBSD, that's New Reno, also similar time frame. Funny thing is, Torrent uses UDP so that they can also implement their own congestion control algorithm, and they use one called LeadBAD, which aims to be very conservative, and it starts really slow and it backs off really fast in order to not compete with the important real TCP traffic. That's a nice detail. But there's also a newer algorithm called BBR, which has Google developed in the 2010s, and I think it's been in Linux 4.9 or something like that, or 4.14, so like 7 years ago. But it's not the default, and it makes the probing a lot more aggressive because it's optimized for the web, for websites that have where they recognize, yeah, people have now a lot more bandwidth, but Cubic is so conservative that it makes websites still feel slow. And also a thing that has changed is that as networks got faster, there was a lot more buffering introduced. So your router with your slow speed got a lot bigger buffer. What that means is that the packets are dropped much later, which can lead to higher transfer rates to some degree, but it also leads to a bigger delay. And the congestion events are recognized much slower. So what the BBR also does, it looks at the latency of the acknowledgments. If acknowledgments suddenly arrive slower and later, it also detects that as a delay. And again, it's more aggressive, and it's also compared, if you have a TCP cubic and a TCP BBR sender machine competing for the same link, a gigabit link, there's papers out there that BBRs are a lot more aggressive, and traffic that uses cubic will be a lot slower if you have two big file transfers. But yeah, BBR is used especially by the big cloud services that make up most of our web traffic, and that makes them load a lot faster. Cloudflare wrote about this in their blog, and in their example, that with a 5 megabit simulated connection, they had something like an example that says 1.5 seconds load time for a WordPress site using BBR and 8 seconds for one using cubic. Especially when they use HTTP2. HTTP2 really likes this more aggressive probing and less slow start, faster start. And Cloudflare, they pull out these numbers, and they mention these numbers. This article is from 2018, and you might have seen them elsewhere. What they tell you to do is using the sysctl of your Linux system. Again, this is Linux specific because BBR is not implemented on BSDs, at least not mainline BSD. They tell you to use the BBR congestion control algorithm, and they also tell you to add this value that says that your socket buffers are cleared, so packets are sent out if your socket buffer contains at least 16 kilobytes of data. What I'm talking about is if your application says, "Hey, I want to send like a kilobyte," it's first going to sit in the socket on your program, and only at some point your kernel will go and take this kilobyte off your socket buffer and send it to the network driver, and the network driver will send it to your NIC, your network interface, and then it will be sent out. So in order to reduce delay on websites, they recommend this magic number, basically. And the Graphene OS developers also have a different idea about this. They, for example, are recommend a higher threshold. And also what Cloudflare mentions is they want you to change the queuing discipline, and we'll talk about queuing disciplines later as well. But yeah, these are two main articles if you want to learn about what values to pick and why they might do a decent job. I mean, the Cloudflare blog article has a bit of magic to it. They don't explain everything, but I think they give you a great insight into the problems that they're solving. Also, what helps is, I mean, if you run a web server, use a newer HTTP version. If you're not doing, if you don't have a reverse proxy, you can just change your config, and if you're using a 5-year-old or newer release of Apache Nginx. I think in Apache you have to load a module as well. You can use HTTP2, which is the sequel to 1990s HTTP 1.1. And it also you can have both at the same time. HTTP2 is I think it's a Google initiative, like these days, Google and others like to push these things and implement them in Chrome, and then because Google has implemented it in Chrome, it becomes a standard basically. Yeah, but HTTP2 makes things faster by reusing a connection instead of, well, by having priorities and using a single connection to even send multiple things at the same time, or whereas HTTP 1.1 required that you have multiple connections open at the same time. I think that's called pipelining. Yeah, but it all helps. HTTP 3 is a thing as well. HTTP 3 uses not TCP, but QUIC, which is like Torrent. It tries to implement their own TCP on top of UDP. And it is again pushed by Google through that browser. And but it's not in any major release of Apache or Nginx, I think. It's only in experimental branches, and there's nothing to this date that you can, you know, where you can just use a stable release and have it. There's also multiple implementations of it from Cloudflare and whatever, but nothing just that has been merged. Yeah, that's what you can do if you host something. Next thing, how can you improve your own network at home? Cake, anyone? If you have used OpenWRT, you might have heard of this whole smart queuing thing, this whole cake thing. The idea is that if this whole delay detection thing is failing us, and if maybe our buffers are too big on the network, can we ourselves indicate, be smart about it, and indicate congestion to reduce latency? The problem is, so first of all, if you have applications, if you have sockets, all these things are all queued up. Sockets are basically a queue for each device, for each application, and they have to be at some point be sent to your network card. They're all computing usually for one queue on better high-end network interfaces. You have multiple queues, of course, but we have this one queue, and someone has to decide who can go first, and that's done in the Linux kernel through a queuing discipline, which sits before the device driver, which might also have some mechanism for determining that. Intel does that for sure. They have their own quality of service stuff integrated into their driver and their firmware. But yeah, this is where you can do something. Yeah, once it passes through that and then to the device driver and the NIC, it will finally be sent to your network and then to your gateway. One thing you can control always is your device. So you can change the queuing discipline on your device. The default in Linux is first in, first out. But in systemd, the default is something called fair queuing codal, FQ codal, fair queue controlled delay, which says that if something, if a queue gets really full, the queue will be purposely delayed in, so a delay is added so that the queue fills up even faster and the drop, the packet drops occur faster, so the packets are dropped faster, so that congestion is indicated earlier and the sending slows down earlier, so that the connection backs off faster. That was how it works. But that kind of helps, but where you really want it to be is in your gateway. Usually you have your DSL modem or cable modem or something, and that's usually much slower than your network speed. Well, most usually you have a gigabit network or a Wi-Fi 5, and especially on Ethernet, you notice that your gateway is really slow. And what your gateway should do is it should stop buffering so much. Buffer bloat, because there's this whole thing called buffer bloat that has to be solved. Buffer bloat is when the buffer adds your hops on your network add too much latency, which there shouldn't be. You know, you type in ping and ping to a host. But the thing is, if you run a speed test under load, this latency can rise. This is done, this was here at the IGA over Wi-Fi. And because the Wi-Fi can't saturate the whole uplink that we have, the loaded latency wasn't that high, but at home and with my Fritzbox VDSL thing, I get 300 milliseconds. And that's quite common. So you have a 300 millisecond latency if you fully saturate your connection, if you do a download. And that means that if you now try to also load a website or do a DNS request, this all takes 300 milliseconds of round trip time. That's slower than the latency to the US West Coast. And that makes the application slow. Websites, video calls, of course, especially if it's suddenly, you will feel that. You will notice that, especially if you have multiple users. And your router, your gateway, should do much better than, at this. And that's where Cake tries to help, and other traffic control algorithms. Buffer bloat is when your hops buffer too much. If your latency increases when you fully utilize your connection, if the buffers are too small, then you don't get enough throughput because too many packets are dropped and you can't fully utilize your link speed. So that's bad. But usually the buffers are too big. They don't add more throughput, but they just increase latency. And that's just unnecessary. And one idea is that we just don't fully utilize the link, and that we try to keep our latency consistent. And we don't optimize for maximum throughput, but consistent latency. And that's what Cake does. Again, latency rises if the slowest link is under high utilization. So if you have, if it's at close to 90-95% or something like that. And it should notify about congestion, but it doesn't do it well enough. It doesn't do it early enough. So what Cake does in effect is it drops packets earlier if they have been in the queue too long for a certain connection, I think, or it adds the control delay to indicate that there's a congestion. And through its magic basically, to me, it kind of is magic. It adds a consistent latency. So your latency can actually stay at this 15 milliseconds, even if you are running a Steam download and you're in a video call. That's like the future that I want. I want to have someone at my place running a Steam download and I don't notice it. And my websites load just as fast. Because for home users, that is, I think, not an uncommon thing, that if someone downloads a big file, the experience for everybody else sucks. In the last 5 years, I think recent Wi-Fi access points have paid close attention to that too, and they have improved compared to what you had 10 years ago, but that's only regarding if you're saturating your whole Wi-Fi bandwidth. If your whole Wi-Fi uplink is full, it already does smart prioritization, and it can keep it kind of going and usable if your airspace is fully utilized. Yeah, and Cake just makes so it keeps your web and app experience as fast as still the same at the same speed, even if you're doing heavy downloading in the background. Caveats are with Cake is implemented in the Linux kernel, I think, since 4.19, and also in the OpenWRT router firmware. But the problem with it is it requires you to know your link speed. It's very bad at guessing how fast your internet speed is. And you usually use like 5 to 10% of your throughput. So your maximum download speed will be a bit slower. And it also breaks NAT offloading, which is a feature that these cheap Wi-Fi access points have to reach the speeds that they promise. This is relevant because most of us still need to use IPv4. So you need NAT, sadly. And these cheap consumer devices have an offloading mechanism, and that's not compatible with the Cake algorithm. So you need to use your CPU. And sadly, these cheap access points have bad CPUs, so they are not the fastest. If you are an OpenWRT user, there are blog posts on the OpenWRT forum that benchmark how fast the access points are if you're using Cake. Hold on, yeah, that's basically the end of my presentation. I just wanted to point out something I forgot. Regarding these tweakables, they say IPv4, but they apply to both IPv4 and IPv6. There's no IPv6.tcp congestion control. Like, mostly all TCP sys vars are exported under IPv4. So they affect both, even if it only says IPv4. Just saying. Yeah, that was my talk. I would be happy. Yes. That's my talk. If you have any questions, please ask. What? I did not expect that. Okay. Okay, thank you. Does anybody have questions? Like, I don't. There might be parts I've skipped over. Yes, please. Yes. Do they? Okay, the question was.
The Fritzbox asked for the maximum speed of your uplink. Mm-hmm. Is this because they use Cake as well? Do you know much about that?
And so the question is the Fritzbox asks for the maximum link speed, and is it because they use Cake? I would have to guess they don't use Cake because I think their processors are too weak for Cake. Just that's what I would guess. I think my Fritzbox model didn't ask me. Maybe it's just pulling it from the modem, but the speed. But they have their own QoS mechanism, so this whole Cake thing is not the same as QoS. QoS means that you classify packets based on ports or some IP flags. There's a DHCP field in the IP packet, and you can say, oh, this is high priority traffic and something like that. What you do is you put the traffic into multiple queues, and then you decide, oh, there's something in this very important queue. I'm immediately going to process it and ignore the other queues. That's what QoS does, basically. You just split the traffic into classes. But that's not what Cake automatically does. Cake can do that too, but you might not need to do that. I know that the Fritzbox have quality of service, So they classify traffic, but that's a bit different. That's not the same goal. And the problem really with Cake is I think it's not very easy to implement in hardware. I think that's just the biggest problem why we don't see Cake, and that that you need to know the uplink speed, which makes it unusable for mobile and Wi-Fi clients. Yeah, but I wish more people would use Cake. But again, you need a beefy processor, or you need to be smart to, or like you need a really good network interface that where you can implement it. Okay. Anything else? Anyone? I can. Yes. Yes, you can absolutely set it, especially if you're using Linux. Again, this is also not on FreeBSD or any BSD as I know. You have to change this TCP congestion control to variable to either to Cake, but then the problem is you haven't given it any parameters. What Cake really wants you to do is give it, you have to tell it the speed. And here on the GrapheneOS article that is linked in the presentation, you can either run this command and then you say, oh, my speed is this big. And they say, and that you use this what's called traffic control command, and then you replace the queuing discipline with this. I mean, on my system, if you run Qdisk on your Linux machine, I need to be root for that, of course. Nah, can't type in the password. It shows you the queuing discipline for your interfaces. Linklocal, of course, doesn't need a queuing disk because it's so fast that you don't need any queuing. But yeah, check out the GrapheneOS article. They also even explain that you can, if you're using systemd networking, I think you can set it in the service file if you're using systemd. There's ways to use it, but the default already on most Linux distros is fqcodel, which is already better than first in, first out. So that might be already good enough. But Cake can do better. Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? No? Yes? Oh, microphone, nice.
Yeah, you said that Cake needs a beefy processor to work, so I'm asking myself if
beefy processor than you find in your 30 euro access point.
Okay, but so if I'm a Linux gamer and I want lower latency, I wouldn't have to sacrifice my FPS if I use Cake. Or is this something significant which I could notice?
No, I don't think it's significant on x86. Where you will notice it, especially if you're on it on a server, if you have a 100 gig NIC, then you might notice it. You would probably notice it on a 100 gig NIC, but. Like these access points, like they usually struggle at like they can't reach gigabit speed with Cake. If you want to use Cake and have a gigabit download link, you probably need an x86 low-end Atom processor or like a beefy ARM core that's almost the equivalent to a smartphone, basically.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And also, if you run Cake on your local machine, it's only, balancing the traffic that your machine generates, not what other people generate in your network. Okay. Last chance, questions? Don't see any. Okay. Thank you for listening. I'll pull up the... Thank you for watching as well. Oh, where is it? Yeah, the talk is online. Thanks.